I'm Robert Bounds, and you're listening to the Monocle Arts Review. As you probably all know by now, on Mondays we tackle the week ahead in art, and making sense of London's exhibitions this week is the art dealer and advisor Kathleen Fox-Davies. On our hit list today, we have work by ballet dancer turned photographer Colin Jones, Israeli artist Ori Gerst, and we'll visit some of the most iconic pieces of work by Andy Warhol. All that coming up on the Monocle Arts Review with me, Robert Bound. Do stay tuned. Without further ado, we welcome Kathleen Fox-Davies, and we also congratulate Kathleen Fox-Davies on the birth of Jackson.
Thank you very much.
It's nice to have you back.
Thank you.
I'm more petite, Kathleen, than before.
Much more petite, thankfully.
These are lovely choices as ever. Why don't we jump straight in? You wanted to talk about a Colin Jones retrospective at Michael Hoppen Gallery.
I do.
This is beautiful stuff. This is classic stuff.
This is a really special exhibition. Michael Hoppen opened his gallery in 1992, and his very first show was Colin Jones. So this is a really wonderful revisiting from almost a different perspective of Colin's work 22 years later, and on the occasion of Colin's 80th birthday year,
okay,
which is really great. Colin's work is Britain, and he recorded a Britain that's gone by.
Yeah.
So it's this wonderful time capsule of a community heritage that we really don't see in modern life anymore.
Yeah, and there's a lot of 50s stuff, 60s stuff. I mean, he was born in the 30s, right?
He was born in 1936.
Yeah.
His story is actually just as interesting as the images that he creates. And I think that his background story is what lends him to be such a sympathetic documentary photographer when he's approaching his subjects. He was born in World War II, East End, England. Mm. He was evacuated so many times from his home that he actually attended 13 schools before turning 16 years old. He graduated basically illiterate, but thankfully he could dance. And he joined in 1953 the Royal Ballet, and was given the amazing opportunity and gift of international travel with the ballet troupe. And from there, he purchased his first Leica and learned how to look at the world in a new way.
Man, this is a man that needs to be interviewed immediately.
He's a modern-day Billy Elliot, real-life Billy Elliot.
Imagine going there. Who does that? Who makes that transition from ballet, from also Royal Ballet, not just like hopping about for fun? I mean, the Royal Ballet to then a world-class photographer with amazing representation and all the rest of it.
They do say that when you have artistic talent, sometimes it's multifaceted, and
it'll
Colin is definitely one of those individuals. He is known as one of the foremost documentary photographers of 1950s, 60s, 70s England. Mm. And this show really highlights the best of his work. It's a small retrospective. It's about 20, 22 pieces, but they are the creme de la creme of his existing remaining archive. All of the works are vintage. They are beautiful objects of photography. Colin does all of his own printing, which you don't see artists do anymore.
Right, yeah.
The works, you know, are 30,
that adds
20.
Some value to them.
It does.
Adds a bit of, it's nice to feel, you know, to imagine the man's fingerprints on the
It's a tactile object that he has seen from conception through to the work on paper. They're really beautiful, and it's covering the entire breadth of his career of subject matter. So you've got the miners from the Grafter series. You've got the Royal Ballet, which are really beautiful, sweet images. You've got images of race riots in Alabama. You've got, I think my personal favorite is a series that's called The Black House, quite rudely dubbed as The Black House. But it's all of the different series, whether you're looking at the Fishermen's Wives or the Miners or just wonderful documentary street photographs of everyday people. There's an intimacy that he's able to establish, and there's a sensitivity and a real empathy towards who he's photographing, and that's what comes through in this show. It's intimate, it's beautiful. You have to go see it before it closes.
And one of the things that Colin Jones seemed to be able to achieve, and all the photographers in that, I mean, that, you know, he was not quite a swinging 60s photographer. He was far more, I guess he was far more reportagey than that, without being studiedly reportage. What comes across in his images seems to me to be a lack of ego, which is kind of missing. I mean, we love David Bailey, we love Terence Donovan, we love these big
who
names.
Who he's compared to.
Yeah, but you know, we love that stuff, and it is wonderful stuff, but it has some manners to it. It has some, you know, it is stylized and all the rest of it. This stuff seems amazing. I mean, there's pictures, I mean, you know, he photographed the bands of the day, and even
the
they seem, yeah, well, yeah, there's that wonderful picture of The Who, kind of walking past the camera, and there's seems to be a very charming lack of ego to his pictures.
Which you've really hit the entire strength of these images, and it is Colin's personality that comes through in all of them, even though he is depicting other people. From the Black House to the Who, his sitters keep in touch with him. So oftentimes those individuals in the Black House, if they got in trouble with the law and they ended up in jail, Colin was used as their reference when they came up for bail. And the same thing with the Who. He still is mates with these superstars that he photographed very early in their career. And he treats all of them the same.
That's lovely to hear, and obviously a well deserved retrospective. Michael Hopkin Gallery, always good stuff as well.
Always great stuff.
And it's nice to have that sort of what goes around comes around vibe with the show that launched the gallery 22 years ago. You said?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's amazing. Okay, that's Colin Jones. His retrospective at the Michael Hopkin Gallery is on until the 3rd of June. So skedaddle down there as soon as you can. This beautiful bank holiday weekend, why not? Okay, next we're going to switch it up a bit. This is Ori Gerst, nicely titled Floating World, which seems like it's probably Japanese, and I think it is. This is at Ben Brown. Talk us through this one, Kathleen.
Now, this is Ori Gerst's very first solo exhibition in a private gallery in London, which is kind of incredible, seeing he's had an incredible career over the past 15 years and is in museum collections, the top. You've got the Guggenheim, you've got the Tate. He's actually had exhibitions at the Tate twice now. But this is the first solo commercial gallery show that he's had, and it is a stunner. Gersh has a theme of underlying trauma and violence through his works, mainly still life and landscape. This show is a bit different in that the violence is not quite so tactile in the works. You walk in and it is a disarming serenity. These pieces are otherworldly, which is exactly what he was going for. He's literally photographing the Buddhist Zen gardens in and around Kyoto in Japan. So they have a really Monet-esque feel to them of serene walkways over beautiful landscape reflected in ponds and rivers. And
There is that kind of, having had a look at some of these images, there is that sort of late, slightly blind Monet feel to these things. But in a really good, beautiful way, the colours, the way that the images seem to... Yeah, there's an impressionistic idea here.
They're incredibly disarming. They're larger than life. They are photographs that he has skillfully manipulated in post-production. So he's taken an image and he's tipped it on its head. Mm-hmm. So the reflection's in the sky and the reflected object is where the water should be. So they put you off balance a little bit. He's also played with layering multiple images to create something that wasn't there, but perhaps it was as a memory.
Yeah.
And so it is reverting back to some of the more difficult subject matter of his previous series, but in a much calmer, more placid way, playing with this idea of physical versus spiritual and photographing these gardens where time stands still. The whole purpose of them was to aid meditation and create a reflected essence of nature, not necessarily what nature actually is.
And such a move away from what his normal subject matter is, as you've alluded to before. Is that why he hasn't had gallery representation or he hasn't had a regular gallery show? Because some of his stuff is just too tough, maybe unsalably tough, but it's the kind of stuff you could digest in a museum.
It's the underlying themes that are much more appropriate for museum shows, only because I'm thinking specifically of the series where he documented a train journey from Krakow to Auschwitz. Mm. Really difficult shared histories, one that people don't normally like to be reminded of, but it's something that is very, very much embedded in his own identity. He is an artist of Jewish heritage, born in Tel Aviv, lives in London, works in London. Another series actually documented a forest in Ukraine where his family hid from the Nazis during World War II. I mean, these are really tough, emotionally scarring family histories that he's exploring in really beautiful ways. The images are always gorgeous above all else.
Yeah.
They're tactile, they're explosions of color, but it is the underlying themes that sometimes are a little bit jarring for the everyday collector.
Well, you can play a little bit of a game of compare and contrast then, as you can do some research on Ori Gerst and then look at his rather mellifluous and beautiful show. It's called Floating World at Ben Brown Fine Arts, and that is on until the 26th of June, as recommended by Kathleen Fox-Davies, who now shall lead us down the garden path at the Halcyon Gallery, where we're going to talk about Warhol icons. Where on earth can we start with Warhol? Is this classic stuff? Is this ordinary stuff? Where are we going with this?
It's everything.
Okay.
This show, it will knock your socks off. The gallery spent over 3 years finding the most perfect specimens of Warhol's work. We're talking early lithographs to the screen prints to works on canvas, the sculptural pieces. They have everything. But not only do they have everything, they have the very best example of what is available on the market that they've found through extensive research. The gallery is known for its impeccable provenance of the pieces that they do sell, particularly secondary market. So they spent 3 years finding Warhols that had the most vibrant color, that were in the very best condition, and that had a provenance that they felt comfortable putting their name on. It's a labor of love, this show, and they've included over 100 individual pieces, many of them entire portfolio collections that are not normally seen in one go, that are being sold as entire portfolio collections. So they've got a real integrity to keep this work together as it's passed on to the next owner.
And this is interesting stuff. I mean, Sotheby's is a place at the moment which is not without its problems. Mm. What happens when a gallery like this, you know, like a big hungry wolf, kind of bites up a lot of the business that would have been going to an auction house?
While sitting across the road from the auction house.
Yeah, exactly. While sitting exactly there exactly in Bond Street. Yeah, exactly. Cheek by jowl with that auction house. This is an interesting thing, isn't it? I mean, where did this work come from? I mean, this is amazing labour of love, of amazing contacts. Mm. I can almost hear the Rolodex whirring around on someone's desk somewhere to get this show together. Do we know where this stuff came from, or is this a very tightly guarded secret?
It's not a tightly guarded secret, because obviously the provenance will list it. But for the general public, it's frankly it's about the content of the show and what the contribution of what they're putting together, both academically and aesthetically. But it very much is a labor of love of what they've done. I think one of the most exciting, at least for the story behind it, collections they put together was the Mao series. So it's 10 of the multicolor block of General Mao. And the collector it came from was one collector that spent over 20 years finding each piece in the very best condition. So not only did the gallery put huge resources and time and effort into building this groundbreaking show, but the context of where these works have come from have that same labor of love behind them as well.
And is that going to be sold as one?
It will be sold as one.
Wow.
And also the Cowboy and Indians portfolio, which you don't normally see even one or two come up on the market, much less the entire portfolio together, also came from a single collector and will be going to a single collector.
Well, power to them. I mean, that shows kind of a lot of strength to also sell it.
To expect
one collector to buy it. So, what do we think? Will that go? Will Chairman Mao go to China, or will it go to a museum?
I don't know.
We don't know, do we?
We don't know.
It's fascinating stuff. It really is. That sounds like, they sound like three kind of unmissable
They
shows.
Definitely are. Go see this show. It's been extended twice due to popularity.
The Warhol.
And it's as someone who's quite familiar with Warhol's work, I didn't think much would surprise me. And walking into the show, it really is a stunning exhibition that's well worth spending an hour or two.
Beautiful. Okay, well, that is Warhol Icons, not underselling itself for once, at the Halcyon Gallery until the 26th of June. Before that, Kathleen recommended to us Ori Gerst, Floating World at Ben Brown Fine Arts. That's on also until the 26th of June. And it is your last call, please, for Colin Jones at the Michael Hopland Gallery. That's on just until the 3rd of June. Thank you very much indeed to Kathleen Fox-Davies for guiding us through what sounds like a very exciting week ahead in the art world in London. You've been listening to The Monocle Arts Review with me, Robert Bounds. The show was produced by Holly Fisher and researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time tomorrow when we'll get Nick Luscombe's pick of new Japanese music. But for the time being, from me, Robert Bounds, thanks for tuning in.